This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. The tragic death of Robin Williams has once again taught us a painful lesson. Depression does not discriminate. Whether you're rich or poor, old or young, male or female, famous or not, you can have depression with the potential for severe consequences and even death. Joining us by phone with more on this is Dr. Ronald Pies. He's a professor of psychiatry at Upstate Medical University and Tufts University School of Medicine in Boston. And he's also the editor-in-chief emeritus of the Psychiatric Times. Welcome, Dr. Pies. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Linda.
You know, recently you were in the studio, and we talked on this show about the difference between grief and depression, as well as some other very interesting positions and ideas you have about the status of psychiatry today. It was a very illuminating discussion.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
So help us once again to understand, for our listeners, what constitutes clinical depression as a true medical condition, and how is it different from simply feeling down, sad, or even experiencing grief, for that matter?
Right. Well, thanks, Linda. First of all, when we speak of clinical depression, we're usually talking about what psychiatrists and psychologists call a major depressive episode, MDE. Basically, that's a period of at least 2 weeks during which the person experiences a markedly depressed mood or loss of interest or pleasure in most activities. And then, by our usual criteria, the person has to have at least 4 other symptoms like insomnia, loss of appetite, decreased energy, decreased concentration, feelings of low self-esteem, and there are other symptoms that the person can get. Keep in mind that a major depressive episode is not a specific disease. It's sort of a building block for either of 2 kinds of mood disorder. There's major depressive disorder, which we sometimes call unipolar major depression. So that's MDD, major depressive disorder. And then there's bipolar disorder. And to simplify things just a bit, I'd like to focus our discussion more on unipolar major depression. Bipolar is kind of a whole other kettle of fish. So basically, major depressive disorder, MDD, is a medical condition in at least 2 senses. First, like any other form of medical illness or disease, major depressive disorder results in a good deal of suffering, incapacity, and often vocational disability. In fact, Harvard University and the World Health Organization concluded that over the next 20 years, unipolar depression is likely to be the second leading cause of disability worldwide, and the leading cause of disability in high-income countries like the United States. Secondly, major depressive disorder is associated with an increased risk for other medical illnesses like cardiovascular disorders and diabetes. And of course, as the tragic outcome with Robin Williams shows, major depressive disorder also brings with it the risk of suicide in as many as 4% of those afflicted.
And so how, in your mind, can someone make the distinction, either in a loved one or in themselves, for that matter, of the difference between having a major depressive disorder and then, or just maybe grieving the loss of someone in their life, or just feeling down periodically?
Yeah, that's a great question. In our last discussion, I mentioned how in ordinary grief or sadness, self-esteem is usually preserved. That is not the case in major depression. The person feels terribly unworthy and not deserving of life. Also, when people are normally grieving, they usually respond to consolation from friends or family. People with major depressive disorder usually are not consolable. They are just constantly down and depressed, tearful, agitated. I also mentioned in our last discussion that the person with ordinary sadness is usually able to carry on with responsibilities at work and at home, whereas the person with major depression is severely impaired in those functions. But You know, I think the best description of severe depression and how different it is from sadness was provided recently by Dr. Kay Jamison in a piece that just appeared in the New York Times. She is a psychologist who has suffered from bipolar disorder for many years, but what she says really applies to severe major depression of any kind. And I'll just read 30 seconds here on what she said, if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
She said, and I'm quoting, "Suicidal depression is a state of cold, agitated horror and relentless despair. The things that you most love in life leech away. Everything is an effort all day and throughout the night. There is no hope, no point, no nothing. The burden you know yourself to be to others is intolerable." End of quote.
Wow.
Yeah, I think anyone listening who has had severe depression knows what Dr. Jamison is describing. We're not talking about a bad hair day. We're really talking about a serious and potentially lethal disorder.
And I read somewhere that as many as 1 in 6 people in the United States, or approximately 17.5 million Americans, suffer from depression
right.
in this country. So it's not a small number who are experiencing this.
No, not at all. Usually we express the frequency in terms of prevalence, and that's basically new cases plus any existing cases in a period of time. So in the United States, the yearly prevalence of major depressive disorder in those 18 or over is around 7% of the adult population. About 16 million people, or roughly 1 in 14 adults in this country. So we're talking just about adults here. If you add in adolescents age 12 to 17, that's an additional 2 million or so Americans a year. So, yeah, about 18 million Americans a year will report a major depressive episode. That's a lot of people.
Really is. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with psychiatrist Dr. Ronald Pies, and we're talking about depression. I don't want to run out of time, Dr. Pies. Two big subjects I want to cover. First, I want to get to both. One is, what are the causes, as you see them, that leads someone to a depression? And, you know, how much is it family history, genetics, that kind of thing? And then I want to talk about treatment and successful treatment. So let's get to the first. Who's most at risk for clinical depression? What are some of the complex issues that contribute?
Right. Well, generally, we think that this is a biological, psychological, and social condition. You know, we don't believe, as some people claim, that everything is a chemical imbalance. That's really sort of nonsense. Although abnormal biochemical changes in the brain often do accompany depression. In terms of risk factors, it seems, at least for unipolar depression, that women are more susceptible than men during their lifetime, and that's a whole complicated issue we probably won't have time to talk about. Risk factors also include things like separation or divorce, the presence of a major medical illness, particularly stroke or certain endocrine disorders. And there are cultural factors that are involved, too. Not surprisingly, poverty increases the risk of depression. And I'll also mention the postpartum period, where the woman who just gave birth can become significantly depressed in about 10% or so of cases.
But we do know now that it's treatable.
Yes.
So the question is, how is it treated most successfully these days? I mean, obviously, talk therapy has always played some role, and in recent years, pharmacologic agents have played an increasing role. Where do you see the best success?
Well, most mild to moderate cases of major depressive disorder will respond to talk therapy alone. That's the good news. Bad news is it's often very hard for people to get that, and decreased access, insurance problems, and so on often make it hard for folks to get psychotherapy. More severe depression often requires medication, and some studies say that the most effective treatment is actually a combination of psychotherapy and medication, which probably work on different aspects of the depression. And in very, very severe or resistant cases, or when psychosis is present, sometimes ECT or electroconvulsive therapy is used and can be very effective.
So there really is hope.
There really is hope. We often find that people will achieve a complete remission from their episode, and some folks never go on to have another one. unfortunately, major depression does tend to be recurrent, and so we don't usually talk about a cure, but we do have good treatments for it.
I also read a very shocking statistic that only 50% of people who are diagnosed with major depression receive any kind of treatment, and many don't even receive treatment that's consistent with current practices. And even people who have attempted suicide don't even report that they've perceived the need for care. Why do you think that is?
Well, you're absolutely right. The majority of people in this country who develop major depression probably never get appropriate professional care for it, and there are a lot of reasons. Certainly, there's still a great deal of shame and misunderstanding surrounding psychiatric disorders in general, and depression in particular. Many people see depression as a character flaw or as a sign of weakness. They think that the person's just feeling sorry for herself and that they should pick themselves up by their bootstraps. They don't realize that having major depression is like being without boots or even without feet. So these are all problems that make it difficult for some people to seek help. And often, even when they get to their general practitioner, family practitioner, the depression is not diagnosed. And so we have a long ways to go in educating both our colleagues and the public about these issues.
Yeah, and the stigma seems to remain. Regardless of all of the attempts at public education, there is a very strong stigma attached to mental illness.
There is. I think it's getting a little better over the years. I think we've seen some improvement, but even today, there is still a great deal of misunderstanding.
In the little bit of time we have left, what would you recommend to someone as to how to help a family friend or family member or a friend who has someone who says they are depressed, especially in light of this whole idea of potential for suicide?
Right. Good question. Well, first off, what should you not do? First of all, don't assume that the person is just kidding around. People often say that, particularly if he or she is talking about ending her life or being tired of living and so on. You should always take that seriously. Not slough it off. If you're afraid the person is actually considering suicide, ask about it. There's a myth out that if you ask about it, you'll put the idea in the person's head. Well, that's not the case. Usually the person feels relieved that someone has finally asked. And if it's clear that the depressed friend or family member is seriously depressed and not functioning, offer to hear them out, let them talk about what's bothering them, but don't try to be their therapist. Help them get in touch with their family doctor or their GP so they can be evaluated. Sometimes what looks like a major depressive episode can turn out to be due to some endocrine or neurological condition, and so a good medical workup is always in order. Then the family doctor can refer the patient for specialized care or work in consultation with a mental health professional.
Well, this has been so enlightening, and there's so much more we could probably talk about, but sadly I've run out of time. But I want to thank you so much for coming, for being willing to chat with us. My guest has been Dr. Ronald Pies. He's a professor of psychiatry at Upstate Medical University and Tufts University School of Medicine in Boston, and he's the editor-in-chief emeritus of the Psychiatric Times. Once again, thanks so much, Dr. Pies.
My pleasure.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.